Hello, and once again, welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Alice Brown is a nurse practitioner at the Alzheimer's Care Center in Albany Med. She has devoted her entire career to the care and support of persons with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. She holds a Master's of Science and a nursing degree from the Sage Graduate School. She's previously worked with Georgetown University's Memory Disorders Program and Parkinson's Institute in Northern California. Approximately 350,000 New Yorkers have Alzheimer's disease, and the population is expected to rise significantly as the population ages. Albany Medical Center is home to the region's only Alzheimer's Disease and Assistance Center, a resource for Alzheimer's disease diagnosis and care. I should say that the center is run by Earl Zimmerman, a man who we deeply respect. He's been here many times. Alice Brown, thanks for being here to be today's part of today's conversation. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I want to emphasize that there will be a point today that every phone is blinking off the hook and ringing. And, you know, if you want to get in and you have a significant question to ask about Alzheimer's or any of the attendant dementias, give us a call now. Alice Brown, let's get a couple of things straight while we have a few seconds here. What are the chances that if you identify early Alzheimer's onset, that you can take some kind of remedial step that will stop the Alzheimer's from proceeding?
Right now, unfortunately, in our field, we don't have any disease-modifying treatments. There are several promising drugs in the pipeline that are due to reach stage 3 clinical trials over the next year or so. We will be doing one of them, if not two of them. But right now, the drugs we have to treat this disorder don't slow the process down, and then they don't modify the disease.
So far, the medicines, I've been sort of keeping track out of this. I think anybody at my age would. so far, they get touted, but they don't really work. We had high hopes from them.
Yeah, we did. The cholinesterase inhibitors, which are the Aricepts, the Exelons, and the Razadines of the world, their research has supported their use in that they help people who take these medications maintain their ability to care for themselves longer over time. So they can feed themselves, dress themselves, you know, participate in their activities of daily living. But the medications are not very robust. The effects are not very drastic, and nobody ever really sees a difference when they start taking these meds.
Well, apparently, and what do I know about this, but that plaque plays a kind of plaque plays a significant part in this. It gets in the nerves. And we thought that there might be some ways to get rid of that plaque. And indeed, I think we did get rid of some of it, but it didn't work.
Research, there are several drugs that underwent phase 3 clinical trials in research where they did clear the amyloid plaque out of the brains. However, it may have cleared the plaque, but it didn't restore cognition. So that was the kicker.
And did we think that it was the plaque that caused the problem, or is it possible the plaque was just there?
I think the plaque plays a role because it accumulates in abnormal places and then therefore kills brain cells. And it's the death of the neurons and the brain cells that actually make you symptomatic of this disease. So the plaque definitely plays a role. Clearing the plaque so far has not shown to improve outcomes in the disease. So some of the research I know now is focusing more on younger folks. So there are several families who are predetermined to get Alzheimer's disease based on their genetics. And what they've done...
If your mother or father had it, you might get it?
Your risk is increased, but there's a different type of Alzheimer's disease called familial Alzheimer's disease where you have a genetic makeup, and it doesn't matter who had it, you are going to get it.
So do you think neuron splicing might be the answer, genetic splicing might be the answer eventually?
Oh, that's way above my pay grade.
Okay. Yeah.
I think there's a genetic component to it. There's a lot of different risk factors, different proteins that we all have in our bodies. Some, if you have one type of this protein, it's not so good. If you have the other two types of this protein, it's okay. So I think there's a lot of risk factors, only half of which we are aware of.
Okay.
So far.
Very quickly, then, if I may. The early signs of Alzheimer's, I forgot my keys and I don't know if I turned the gas off.
that happens to everybody, and that's pretty common. We call those senior moments. When it becomes pathological is when it becomes consistent.
What do you mean by pathological?
When it signifies onset of disease, meaning a pathology is present.
Well, yeah, but how do we know? I mean, give me a sign that might be interpreted as pathological.
You're forgetting all your appointments. You don't remember any of your appointments. You're calling your daughter 15 times in 20 minutes
saying the same thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not just a routine, where did I put my keys? I can't find them. What did I come into this room for? Kind of forgetting. It's a more consistent short-term forgetting.
Okay, let's go to Kate in Heath, Massachusetts. Kate, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. My father, who's, I think, 73, was diagnosed about 7 years ago with Parkinson's.
Okay.
And they think he may have had it for longer than, for years prior.
Okay.
But, you know, he's always been an avid walker and kept himself in very good shape, and they think that might have kind of kept it at bay. And he's kept up that walking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he walks about 4 miles a day. And I'm just curious, you know, he has a tremor, he shuffles, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering what, you know, I'm kind of now like hyper dialed into, you know, he's kind of, you know, the kind of senior moment thing, what you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What is the connection between Parkinson's and dementia and Alzheimer's?
Well, let me just clarify one thing. Dementia is a big term that just means cognitive dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
So like cancer is a big term. You have a gazillion kinds
right.
of cancer.
Okay.
Under dementia, you have different types of dementia. Alzheimer's is the most common in 70% to 75%.
Okay.
Parkinson's is a neurodegenerative disease that is completely different from Alzheimer's disease in that it is not of the same pathology.
Mm-hmm.
The pathology is different, the symptoms are different, the disease is different.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, unfortunately, have Parkinson's with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
You can have Lewy body dementia, which is frequently associated with Parkinson's disease. And
what's
that's
it called? Lewy body?
Lewy body, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that usually is presents with hallucinations.
Oh, okay.
And
so would that be something that his doctor would have told him, that he would have that specific strand of Parkinson's?
Well, you don't know.
Uh-huh.
You don't know till the symptoms present.
Uh-huh.
There is no way to determine by any scan or any testing.
That's terrible.
What exactly, you know, somebody has.
Yeah, and you could, but autopsy will tell you, right?
Yes, autopsy will tell you.
And would that exhibit itself pretty immediately, or does that could he like not exhibit those?
He may not ever get it at all.
Uh-huh.
Might
he not exhibit it, and then that might come up, you know, 5 years down the line?
Yes, that's a possibility.
Okay.
That is a possibility. You know,
yeah.
Like anything, it can show up.
Uh-huh.
But just because he has Parkinson's disease doesn't mean he's going to get Lewy body dementia or even dementia with Parkinson's.
Uh-huh. Has he forgotten anything, Kate, while you're at it?
You know, I mean, it's hard for me to know because I feel like I'm kind of, I'm hyper attuned to it now.
Mm.
And so, you know, he says things and, you know, who knows what's being 73 years old and what's, you know, kind of Parkinson's. It doesn't really strike me as that odd, but I think just being kind of hyper-tuned into it.
Yeah.
Well, what we often recommend is to just, you know, when there's a question, bring him in for a baseline. You know, we can do baseline evaluation testing and go from there.
He sees a doctor in Boston, and it's very on top of it.
Oh,
okay.
Good.
What else was I going to ask?
Well,
what about anything you know about Tai Chi in Parkinson's?
It's very effective in helping Parkinson's patients with their balance.
Okay. All right.
Kate, thank you very much.
You've
got
you.
A lot of people on the phone now.
Okay,
appreciate
no problem. Take
it.
Care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Michelle in Del Mar. Very quickly, Michelle, go.
Hello. She has dementia, but it's, you know, surely progressing to Alzheimer's. According to her neurologist, that's what it looks like, that she just hasn't received that diagnosis. Problem is, my sisters and I see her with the kind of pathological short-term memory issues that you just described. I mean, you were describing my mom. And what we want to know is, you know, she's getting to the point where we don't know that she's safe to drive anywhere. She's still driving. We don't really think she should be. You know, she does show up at your house for the wrong time. She has notes in a million places. When is it time to, I guess, take away her independence? I mean, it kills me to even say that, but is there a sign or a signal or, you know, what's the
Well, it sounds to me like you've had a few signs already, and actually one of the most best things you can probably do is take her for an official driving evaluation. Sunnyview Rehab Hospital, their occupational therapy department, does driving evaluations. It's a two-part evaluation, and that would actually answer your driving question right then and there.
Hmm. Okay, and what about the, you know, day-to-day stuff? You know, she's constantly, like, she, like, just what you described, she calls you out five times because you're on her mind, like there's something there triggering the memory or that something's going on, but she might show up on the wrong day or...
Okay, Michelle, we've got to get an answer because we're up against the, you know, spot here. Go ahead.
Actually, Michelle, what I would do is it sounds to me like your mom is at the point where she needs some intervention and some help. We have two social workers at our center that are really, really good at what they do, and I couldn't do my job without them. And that's who I usually refer these questions to because there's day programs.
That's at Albany Med.
Yeah,
and
at
is
Albany
there,
Med.
Is there a telephone number or a way to get in touch?
262-0800.
262-0800
is okay. Our main number.
Okay.
Michelle,
thank you so much
thanks
for this
calling.
Program.
Yeah, thank
okay.
you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go. Oh, no, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come right back. There's one free phone for anybody who wants to use it.
Support comes from Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors. CurranCompliance.com. Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, now presenting their Renaissance Robotic System for minimally invasive spine surgeries with Dr. Ja'an Shen, NLH.org. And Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop.
There's one free phone. We'd love you to have it. In the meantime, we'll go to Kathy in Erie, Pennsylvania. Okay, Kathy, you're on.
Oh, hello?
Hello, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi. We have a history of Alzheimer's in my family, and I also am a registered nurse, and I worked in a long-term care facility in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, and my mom was diagnosed about 10 years ago, and she's progressed, and she's really getting very bad. But I am scared to death of getting this disease. And I really need to find a doctor because I don't have symptoms, but I don't know what the latest test is. There's no test for this. Or I'm ready to volunteer for research somewhere.
Well, that actually might be your best bet. Kathy, because a lot of research now is focusing on healthy people at risk. And whenever you have a family member with Alzheimer's disease, your risk has increased from 10 to 30%.
Well, I know that. It's frightening.
It is. It is. And as a daughter of two Alzheimer's patients, I share your fears. But that's what your best bet could be. And you know, there's a lot you can do prophylactically and what we tell all our patients, even the ones we have diagnosed. Anything that maintains a healthy body maintains a healthy brain. And the longer you can keep your brain healthy, the better off you can hold, the better you can hold off, you know, the onset of symptoms of this disease.
So that's interesting. So walking every day, for example?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The three prongs that we tell people to take is physical exercise. 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. I mean, and we mean that because your brain needs the healthy blood and oxygen it gets from exercises. You know, and the social activity is extremely important. A lot of Alzheimer's patients socially withdraw. And mental activity, so the old crossword, Sudoku, all of those things. Anything that challenges your brain and makes you use it in ways that you don't normally do is good for your brain.
So what about retirement? I mean, somebody raises this with me every once in a while. Says, you should retire. I say, no, I'm not going to retire. But the question then is, isn't the engagement at work something that would keep you productive and your brain?
There's actually been a recent research study that says people who work longer don't get the symptoms of dementia as soon as people who retire earlier.
My mom retired early.
But I think the key there is to keep yourself mentally active. I mean, you don't have to go to work. You know, if you have a job you hate, what's the point? Then retire, but just do something else that's going to keep you mentally and socially engaged and active. Volunteer.
Yeah. Hey, Kathy. Go ahead.
Would I be able to find a doctor who could connect me with? I'm serious about this. I would volunteer myself for research.
Clinicaltrials.org.
Clinicaltrials.gov.
I'm sorry. Clinicaltrials.gov. And if you go to the ADEAR website, ADEAR, is also a clearinghouse for all the research studies that are currently going on in Alzheimer's disease. Clinicaltrials.gov has every research trial going on in every disease state. So whatever it is you're looking for, you can find on that website.
Honestly,
I didn't know that.
Here's an honesty question for you.
Sure.
An honesty question is defined as you have to answer it. Because if not, you know, lightning bolt. Okay.
Right.
Ready? Here it goes. Do you have any faith in anything you see on the horizon?
I have faith that we are going to get something sooner rather than later. I think the science is getting good enough where we have different targets. Back when the days when Aricept first came out, we didn't really have the targets that we have now. But because of one of the research studies that's been going on for almost 10 years, the Alzheimer's Disease Neuroimaging Initiative, which is just an information collecting study, which we Albany Med's been involved in since 2004, is really helping us target areas for drug development and targets for
mechanisms. It's interesting because, you know, the HIV community insisted that the government find a way out, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
So the real question is maybe political organization. I hate to be that way, but if people really insist, maybe something will happen.
Well, I think that's the only real way you're going to get the support that we need to donate as much money as that needs to go into Alzheimer's research to really come up with a cure sooner rather than later. And we're going to need a lot of pressure from the public and the baby boomers that now are at very high risk of getting this disease.
Kathy, thank you for calling. The lines are overflowing.
Thank you.
We want to give everybody a chance. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay. Our guest is nurse practitioner Alice Brown. As you can see, she's really up on it, and that leaves one free phone open. Let's go to Rob in Ballston Spa. Rob, you're on.
Hey, my question I guess the best way to describe it, I'll tell my father something, and in a few minutes, he will have completely forgotten it. He'll forget he had his keys in his pocket. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, Dad, no, they're in your pocket. Or I'll remind him what we just spoke of.
Mm-hmm.
And he explodes. I mean, he just gets so, not physical, but just, you know, verbally. You didn't tell me that. I'm fine. They're not in my pocket. All those things. It's just,
it becomes very trying. So, Rob, what's the question?
Is this something that is normal that goes on with this type of thing? Or, is that kind of, it's like a denial almost.
Well, yeah. People have a very strong sense of denial, and there's a big fear factor associated with this disease and this diagnosis. But anger and frustration are key pieces of early Alzheimer's disease because people understand that their memory's not working as well and they can't control it. So it's the lack of control that causes those anger outbursts. And we medicate that a lot in the beginning. Because,
what do you mean medicate it?
Well, we give people drugs, usually very antidepressants such as sertraline, really help control the anxiety, help really be a mood stabilizer so that, as they get into this process, that only gets worse unless it's addressed.
Yeah. Hey, Rob, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yep. Let's go to Eric in Ballston. Okay. You're on, Eric. Eric. Whoops. You're off, Eric. Okay. Let's go to, there are two free phones now, by the way. James in Hudson. Hi, James. How are things in Hudson?
Oh, things in Hudson are, it's a beautiful place there. I mean, hopefully they don't ruin it.
I know that. I married a Hudson girl.
I'm going to be quick because there are a lot of people on the phone.
Indeed. Go.
I have a father who has dementia.
Uh-huh.
And just to repeat the words of your last caller, he's gotten so nasty to me that I can't even go to the house.
Understood.
And my mother, thank God, is taking care, is a care, the caretaker.
Uh-huh.
How do I help her? How do you help caretakers? I think that's the most important
thing. I think the biggest thing that caregivers need is support. And knowing that they have someone to support them, because they're facing a lot of major hurdles and a lot of difficult things. So support. But if, you know, a lot of that is physical support. That's you going into the home and helping care for the patient so that the caregiver gets respite. You know, they can leave the house for 2 hours and get their hair done or go shopping, you know, without that, you know, the person.
Yeah, but
patient.
What about the directed anger towards him?
How
does he fit in if, in fact, when he goes to the house, he becomes
the
recipient
anger.
Of the anger?
No, that's my problem because I try to, I'm sorry to interject, but I try to help him out. And I just was, you know, my father and I didn't ever get along, but he just was, you know, it was more of a problem than.
You know, being that your presence might actually aggravate the situation, you know, I don't know if that's what's a possibility for you, but maybe financially you can help your mom out by paying for a day program, you know, 1 day or 2 days a week to get him out of the house.
Are there many of those?
Yeah, actually, there are quite a few in the area. And, you know, we have, again, call our main office, 262-0800. And we
say
can,
that again, 262?
262-0800.
Yeah.
And we can supply you with the list of daycares we have listed by county, actually, so it's very easy to find. So that's one way you can assist, I would think.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank
You're welcome.
You, James.
I'll get off the bunch about other people on. Thanks.
Okay, let's go to Mike in Esopus. Mike, you're on.
Good afternoon. I had a question earlier in the program. You talked about familial Alzheimer's, I believe. How do you go about identifying if that's the case? My grandmother had Alzheimer's. My mother has been battling it now for 6 years.
And, basically, what you'd have to do, Mike, is get genetically tested. There are certain genetic tests that we could do that would determine whether or not you have familial Alzheimer's disease. Even though you have a mother and a grandmother with Alzheimer's disease, familial Alzheimer's disease is a really different ball of wax. It starts in patients in their 30s and 40s, and everybody in the family gets it. So you obviously have a strong genetic component of Alzheimer's disease in your family, but I wouldn't say you have familial Alzheimer's disease.
How old are you, Mike?
54.
Okay.
Are your risks increased? Absolutely. You have an increased risk of developing Alzheimer's, but it's not a given that you're going to get it. The reason we don't do a lot of genetic testing simply is because we don't have any treatment that's effective. So what's the point of getting the test?
Sure.
Okay. So the last caller was talking about, you know, what they can do. My family's been blessed. We live down here in the Hudson Valley, and the local Alzheimer's Association has been nothing short of a godsend as far as arranging for. My mom still goes to daycare 5 days a week. We have a caregiver that lives with my mom.
That's amazing. That's great.
It's the only means we have of keeping her in the house.
Well, the Alzheimer's Association is an absolutely phenomenal organization, and we have very good friends there. So I would always pledge my support to the Alzheimer's Association.
Mike, going to let you go and see if we can get some more people in, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. Let's go to Eric in Ballston. Okay, Eric, go ahead.
Yes, my question is, my mother's predisposition towards this, and her mother, when she had Alzheimer's, was rapid degradation. I mean, we're talking months.
Okay.
And we just lost our father on New Year's, and I think that was keeping her mentally challenged. He was ill.
Uh-huh.
And just in the last couple of weeks of his passing, I've noticed an exacerbation of her symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to see, like, how do we re-engage her to the degree that she was involved. I mean, the everyday type things was really keeping her on her toes. And, you know, other than taking her in and putting her into an all-day program, how do we not upset her, you know, to say, well, Mom, we know you are going to eventually be at this situation. How do we approach that subject with her?
And may I add just one caveat to that? Why should you? Go ahead.
Well, let me offer my condolences on the passing of your dad. And, you know, one of the big components of Alzheimer's disease is depression. So until you treat the depression, you're not going to really be able to initiate any other interventions. I think that would be the first thing you'd really want to evaluate. I mean, it hasn't been that long. It's been less than a month. And, you know, grief is an appropriate reaction to a spouse's death. And depression actually has a significant impact on a person's cognition. So when people come into us for an evaluation, if they're depressed, we don't even initiate the dementia workup until we treat the depression, because it masks so much in your properly functioning cognition. So I think it would be important for you to bring your mom to somebody to make sure that she's not depressed, like Dr. Zimmerman, where we are, because he's really good at this. And, you know, getting to the root of it and to treat the depression and then start to look at the dementia. And the thing is when a spouse dies, that's usually when the children clue in that there's a problem, because the other spouse has been doing such a good job of covering for the other one. And so a whole reevaluation of your current situation really should have to be done once you make sure that all your ducks are in a row.
Right. That was going to be my next question. How do we vet the grief symptoms versus how long do you go before you start saying, okay, now we're getting into depression? Because, I mean, she has been, and I have brought it up. She's very reluctant to even go beyond that, and she just says, I'm fine. I'm just taking longer to process.
Again, you know, denial is a powerful emotion, and what's right for one person in a time frame for grief is not necessarily appropriate for another. I would really bring her in for a professional evaluation for the doctor to really ask the questions that need to be asked to see if this really is a grief process or if she's truly depressed and needs treatment.
Okay, Eric, that's it. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Okay, let's see. Yeah, we could do another one here. Let's go to Leslie in Kingston. Leslie, you're on.
Hi there. Not so much a question, but kind of to expand a little bit on the denial situation. My mother also had dementia. She was never diagnosed with Alzheimer's. But the aspect of denial is also they become wonderful at hiding things. I'm just calling to cue in other family members who have the slightest hint that there's something wrong, that to get involved with their parents or whoever to watch over their checking accounts, where monies go, pills and things like that, just to become more aware of these things, because we let it go for too long, and by the time we realized it and actually got a look at her checking account, we're actually mortified at what was taking place.
What was taking place?
Well, we found out that she would lose checkbooks and she would start another check register and write checks that weren't signed. She would mail out checks that were unsigned and have balances in her checking account that weren't even true to what they were. And bills that she thought she was paying were not being paid. We'd find envelopes in the drawer with a check in it, and it had never been mailed out.
Yeah.
That's pretty common stuff. Yeah, that is pretty common.
Yeah, it is.
And right. unless you actually ask the right questions and delve a little deeper, you can be easily misled.
Well, she's lucky she has a good family. Leslie, we got to let you go. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Okay, let's take a break. Short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. providing 24-hour emergency and critical care for dogs and cats every day, including all holidays. VESHDeerfield.com. Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center's Graduate Social Work Program and Graduate and Undergraduate Nursing Programs, hosting an open house Thursday, February 27th, 6 p.m., St. Francis Hospital Medical Arts Pavilion, adelphi.edu. And Premier Medical Group, gastroenterology, urology, internal medicine, endocrinology, geriatrics, nephrology, and pulmonology, with offices throughout the Hudson Valley, premiermedicalhv.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back with our wonderful guest today, Alice Brown, nurse practitioner at the Alzheimer's Care Center in Albany Med. And as you can all hear, she knows her stuff. Let's go to Debbie in Cambridge. Okay, Debbie, you're on.
Hi. This is Debbie. My mom had dementia, and for the last 9 years, she was in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. And she passed 2 years ago, and about that time, I was having problems with memory and fuzzy brain, and I figured out that I had a gluten and dairy intolerance.
Uh-huh.
And I had read an article recently that said that gluten and dairy can cause a reaction with the immune system, and it can destroy brain and nervous tissues. That's a scenario called neurological autoimmunity. And I'm wondering if the increase in the number of people we're seeing with dementia and Alzheimer's could be autoimmune response to food allergies.
You know, I can't answer that, Debbie, because I don't have enough research to support that. That doesn't mean I don't think it could be true. But you need, you know, positive clinical trials to prove a correlation between a couple of things. And there aren't any clinical trials out there. Does that mean that, you know, I think our brain works in mysterious ways, and I think it's influenced by a lot of things we don't even understand yet. And so it wouldn't surprise me that anything that would affect your immune system would affect how your cognition and how your brain functions. So I think it's all tied together somewhere.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
But Debbie, I just wanted to ask you this. If you're right in terms of what you're hypothesizing, why would there be more cases? I mean, we've been eating gluten for years.
I think one of the things they're talking about that it's GMO now. The wheat might be produced through genetically modified.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that might be creating more allergies. I know that my foggy brain and my memory issues have gone away since I've gone on.
Interesting.
Again, I don't doubt that because good health will reflect itself in good cognition. Good cognition is generally a reflection of good health. So anything that negatively impacts your health can negatively impact your memory and cognition. The other thing is that in the past, I truly believe nobody's lived this long.
That's why
I think we're seeing this is an old age disease, Alzheimer's disease. The biggest risk factor is age. So, people in the past died before they were 70, and so now most of our normal onset Alzheimer's patients are in their low 70s, mid 70s. So I think that's more of a reason for the all of a sudden uptick and the recognition that this disease exists. It's not senile dementia anymore.
Yeah. Hey, Debbie, we got to go. Thanks very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Let's go to Mary in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Is that right, Mary? Is that where you are?
Yes.
Great. You're listening online?
Yes, I am.
Great.
I just kind of happened to cross you by accident.
Okay.
And it's a subject I'm interested in because my dad died of Alzheimer's. My mom had severe dementia. And I just want to share an observation about how many people interact with their relatives who have some form of dementia. For example, Dad will say, shouldn't we think about where we're going to have dinner? And daughter will say, I just told you, we're eating in, don't you remember? And that, don't you remember? Don't you remember? Seems very cruel to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's a very good point. People tend to get very angry.
It seems like a bad habit and an unnecessary habit.
Yeah.
Why remind them?
I don't think people do that intentionally.
Absolutely.
So I think more self-awareness when you're talking to somebody with Alzheimer's about whether you're saying, remember when, or do you remember, that's all very
Aren't there groups that you know, Alzheimer's support groups?
Absolutely. Alzheimer's support groups. And the Alzheimer's Association gives classes to caregivers and families, you know, on communication techniques. And, you know, those are some of the things you let go. You know, you don't say, do you remember, or I just told you, or that kind of a thing. So there's a whole process by which, you know, you should really approach a patient with Alzheimer's disease that's more respectful of, you know, their disease process and where they are.
And it doesn't get you anywhere to yell at them.
Well, no, pick your battles. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not, you know, does it really matter if they think today is Saturday, if it's Tuesday?
Exactly.
No, it doesn't matter. So forget about it. They don't need to know this. So,
you know, but what might matter is I know somebody who would always leave the gas on in her house.
Oh, that matters.
Now, that matters.
That's when you turn off the stove. That's when
what
you disconnect
happened
it.
That's what happened in our case.
Yeah, you
exactly
disconnect it, you know, if that's the only safety issue. But if that's a safety issue, then there are other safety issues. And, you know, then it might be worth having a whole safety evaluation of, you know.
Sure. Hey, Mary, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
Right. Let's go to Philip in Little Falls. Philip, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Hi, I was wondering if you know about Alan McDonald's research of Alzheimer's brains?
The name doesn't do anything for me, but I'm a bad name person. Can you tell me what the research is about?
Oh, certainly. He did some research, because he's a pathologist, and he did some research back in the 80s and discovered that a number of Alzheimer's brains were actually positive for Lyme spirochetes. And, I mean, he has a website, alzheimerborreliosis.net, and he's been doing a lot of, you can also find information on the ILADS site, which is the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society. He was working with another doctor, and found, indeed, that some of his new tests that he came up with were finding some spirochetes in some of these patients that he was treating.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to put it out there because I know there's been a lot of mystery about the causes of Alzheimer's, and I'm wondering if you had pursued or looked into any of this.
Well, Lyme disease is, you know, it's always a hot topic, especially in any neurological office. And, you know, what we do when people come to us complaining of memory disorders is we order a boatload of screening tests, titers for all kinds of things. I mean, back in the day, syphilis used to cause dementia, tertiary syphilis. So you'd have to always screen for syphilis. So, you know, we still order those tests. We order, you know, B12 and folate levels, depending on what we see. As far as specific Lyme, it depends on what story you present with. You know, some stories are pretty straightforward, onset at 72, short-term memory loss, mild family history, yada, yada. They probably don't have spirochete Lyme CNS disease. But, you know, and different presentations, I guess it's up to the physician. I mean, that's where, you know, a clinician is invaluable and their experience. And I thank God every day I learned under Dr. Zimmerman and continue to learn every day because he knows his stuff. And this has come up on numerous occasions, but those are the kind of things you explore at the initial appointment. And that's one of those kinds of tests you order in the beginning to screen for.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Can I just have one more comment?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of my big concerns, and I'm sure this has been discussed on the station before, is the inadequacy of the blood testing. I know, like, Advanced Labs, which is over in Pennsylvania, is not approved for New York yet and has, you know, developed some testing techniques of actually culturing long-term to find out if there are spirochetes present. And from my understanding, these spirochetes tend to hold up in the tissue rather than so much in the bloodstream. And
okay, listen, Rick, we've already discussed that issue of spirochetes. Alice doesn't know anything about that. You know, I'm glad you called and I'm glad you mentioned it because anything is helpful. But I think we'll move on, okay?
Very good.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Okay, and let's go to Philip in Little Falls. Philip in Little Falls, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Hi, how are you doing, Alice?
Good. Thank you.
Oh. Good. I hear that.
It's Alan.
I'm interested in, over in Rochester, there's a gentleman, or there's a crew of people working on the idea that the brain has a lymph system. It's like a lymph system. The lymph system's in the body, cleans out the toxins in the body, and they're working on the idea that the brain has a lymph system. And the thing is that with a lymph system, okay, you got to separate. I'm working on the idea that you got to separate the software from the hardware, the physical from the ethereal, incorporeal from the corporeal here. And if you're dealing with the brain, you're dealing with the corporeal phenomenon, the physical phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
So you would fix it physically.
Okay, is there a question here, Philip?
Yeah, how come they didn't come out with the information that if you work the glymph system by agitating the brain, actually, physically, like by shaking the head, that it gets the... Oh, even in the Men's Magazine this month, on page 31, it has the information that a mouse's brain... I could read it for you.
No. Okay.
Philip, basically, the way information gets put out there is you have to undergo several clinical trials, and in order
they're working on that.
Right, but so then it's not a conclusive piece of evidence until they have the research that supports that theory, and then they have to be able to replicate that research.
Okay, they have it. They have it up to the point where the mouse's brain shrinks while they're unconscious.
Okay, hey, Philip, this is getting a little too technical for us, so we're going to let you go, and we appreciate the call and the hint. Appreciate it. Okay, bye. Let's go to Veronica in Del Mar. Veronica, you're on.
Hello, Alan. Hi, Alice.
Hey.
Hi.
My mom was diagnosed by Dr. Zimmerman, and he was wonderful. She was diagnosed rather young. I believe she was 61,
okay.
And now we've been into this process for 8 years. I have a question regarding... She's on all the medicines required for Alzheimer's, and well-meaning people send us articles regarding some nutrient-rich things that can also help with slowing the process of Alzheimer's. Have you heard anything about coconut oil or saffron?
Oh, my
and
God.
And also, can you speak to patients that are diagnosed early and if there are reasons for that versus patients who are diagnosed perhaps when they're 72?
Well, the first part of your question, the nutraceuticals, the coconut oil, if I had a dollar, I could have retired 15 years ago. You know, coconut oil, vitamin E, flaxseed, you know, whatever. There's nothing really proven. And again, we're research.
B12, no?
Huh?
B12.
B12 and B6 and folic acid are supported by research.
Yes.
But those are the only nutraceuticals that are supported by research to really support cognitive function.
And there are always people out there who'll make a buck.
Absolutely.
By telling you to buy the product.
And the other thing is with nutraceuticals is they're not regulated. So you actually don't know what you're getting in your product. So unless you are really comfortable with one particular vitamin company that you feel is good, then stick with them. But B6, B12, and folic acid are the only vitamins we recommend because they're the only ones supported by research. You know, as far as the other goes, who am I to say they don't work? But none of the research that has been conducted to date has really supported that.
But when you started this, and I asked you that first question, Alice, which was, do we know anything that can retard the onset of Alzheimer's? The answer was no.
No, correct.
But these, now you're saying those three?
They support cognitive health.
Oh, cognitive health.
They just support your cognitive health. So they make your brain, as it is, work better.
Oh, interesting. I'm glad you made that observation.
Yeah, because there really isn't anything at this point that's going to slow this process.
Veronica, thank you for calling. Appreciate
it. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to Kristen in Altamont. Kristen, go.
Hi. My question has to do with, I have a couple who are friends of mine. She obviously has the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. She repeats the same question over and over within seconds of asking it.
Okay.
But he, every time he tries to approach the topic with her so they could discuss it, she just won't even talk about it. and I was advising them and helping them and got an appointment set up at the UCLA. They live in California, the UCLA memory unit there, and she canceled it. She just will not deal with it, and he is struggling with how to approach it with her. Do you have any advice on how they might proceed?
You know, that's a tough question, and I'm not sure it has one right answer, and I guess it would depend on the people involved. I mean, a couple of scenarios would be to just say, come on, honey, we're going out, and then just bring her.
Uh-huh.
Another scenario would be to guilt her into it. You know, I guess it all depends on who you're dealing with and how what the personalities involved would tolerate. There's no one right answer to that question. You know, it's subterfuge usually is what people resort to because the denial is so strong. And unless you're going to get into a face-on-face, full-out confrontation, which obviously you don't want, you know, a little subterfuge goes a long way.
It does.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Kristen,
you're
thank
welcome.
You for the call.
Bye.
All right. So now let's go to Judy in Gloversville. Hey, Judy.
Hi. Mine's a two-part question, but a quick question. Does dementia turn into Alzheimer's?
Okay. Dementia is a term. It's like a big umbrella term, just like cancer is a big umbrella term. And under cancer, you have all different kinds of cancer. Under dementia, you have all different kinds of dementia. So dementia just is. It doesn't turn into anything.
Okay.
Alzheimer's could be part of
dementia. Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia.
Right.
Okay. And Alzheimer's kills you eventually, correct?
Correct.
So it depends on what type of dementia you have, whether that would kill you or whether you would die from a cold or something.
The thing about, neurodegenerative diseases is that they affect your brain, and your brain regulates everything. So eventually it's going to affect part of your brain where part of your body's not going to be able to work too well. And normally what happens is people have swallowing difficulties. So then they begin to aspirate. And so then they get pneumonias. And, and then it's, that kind of a thing. Normally at the end of life, in the severe stage of Alzheimer's disease, we recommend hospice for that very reason. We do a lot of hospice referrals for a lot of end-stage dementia.
Now, is this hospice coming to the house, or are you going to a hospice facility?
Either or. You get the consult. Most of the consult is the community-based hospice where they come into the home and do the evaluation and can help you keep the patient in the home. It, very few dementia patients go to the inn, but some do.
But this is the hospice time usually is restricted to the very end of life, isn't it?
Yeah, but the rules have changed a little bit for dementias because it's not so clear cut. So there are some guidelines, but the thing about it, if you have dementia and go on hospice, you can come off, but you can go back on.
Judy, anything else?
No, my mother has dementia, but I just had no idea whether one progressed to the other or whether they were separate, that was my main question.
You're right, Judy, but you won't know, really, because there is no really great test until the end, right? Isn't that right?
Well, clinically, we can pretty much tell you what disease you have.
Whether you have Alzheimer's.
Yeah, we can do that clinically 99% of the time.
Okay, great. Okay, Judy, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate
it. Thank you, too.
Okay. Let's have, Alice, let's have your phone number where people can get a hold of Dr. Zimmerman or you or all the wonderful people at Albany Med.
The main clinic number is 518-262-0800.
Do it again, just in case anybody forgot.
518-262-0800. And I just want to throw out there
that
at Albany Med, our prior location was actually a very difficult place to find. But we have a new location now right next to Child's Hospital on Hackett Boulevard where the parking is beneficial. It's easy. Everything's easy to do. So it's much easier to come to an appointment there now.
Well, that's great. So it's terrific that you've been here with us. It was a great show. It's depressing, all right. Nevertheless, it's something we all face, and the more information we have about it, the better off we are. So we'll see you all on the next Vox Pop, and I want to read something to you, if I may, where underwriting support for the Vox Pop comes from Tupperson, natural creams designed to address the epidemic of addiction to pain medicine by providing pain relief for the 21st century, Tupperson.com. And again, thanks for joining us today on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell, who did a terrific job. Her handwriting is magnificent, and she really helped us out. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.